Blog Talk Radio.
From Lives in the Balance, the nonprofit organization committed to advocating on behalf of behaviorally challenging kids and their caregivers, this is Dr. Ross Green. Welcome to Collaborative Problem Solving at School. I'm delighted that you were able to join in. This program airs live each Monday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time during the school year. We explore a variety of topics aimed at helping you better understand and help challenging students and implement the collaborative problem-solving approach in your classroom and your school. If you have a question or comment, call 646-727-2691. If you call in, you'll be muted until I bring you on the air. And now, let's talk about challenging kids and how we can help them. Well, hello there, and welcome to today's program. Today is our last educators panel of the of this school year. As you know, we take the summer off on collaborative problem solving at school. And, well, that means that the May Educators Panel is the last Educators Panel until September. And this is only my opinion, but I think this has been a great year for the Educators Panel. We have explored a variety of important issues related to schools, and today's our last one. So I know that one of our – now, we'll pick it up again in September. Don't worry. And, well, there are some – very cool things that are going to be happening with this radio program next September. Obviously, we will be continuing with the educators panel, but well, we're probably going to be starting with a new Anytown school this time, Anytown Elementary, and who knows where that school will come from? We'll find out. I think I have a feeling I know. I'm also going to be interviewing next school year the leaders and core group members from each of the schools participating in this large collaborative problem-solving project going on in the state of Maine right now, where 14 different schools are implementing the collaborative problem-solving approach, and they're all going to get on the air next year. So there will still be days on which we do Q&A, and I respond to some of your emails and give you an opportunity to call in. But, well, those programs are going to be fewer because we're adding a few things to the agenda here. But today on the agenda, of course, is the educators panel, and it remains to be seen what kind of a panel we're going to have today. Once again, I know that one of our panel members cannot join us, but I know that one of our panel members is on the air with us now. Hi, Nina.
Hello, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. And I know that Tom won't be able to join us today. He had a meeting he could not extract himself from. Can you imagine him going to a meeting instead of participating in the educators panel? But I guess stranger things have happened. Like, bizarre. And I'm betting that I haven't heard that Carol will not be able to join us, so we'll see if she joins in soon. But,
okay, good.
Let's start with whatever you have on your mind today. I've got a few emails that we can respond to, but one of the things I was hoping we could talk about today is, you know, you're one of the schools that are in the project in Maine, and
yep.
One of the things that I was thinking we could talk about is where your school is at now, because you're one of these schools that's furthest along in implementing collaborative problem solving, and what kind of things you have in mind to hit the ground running for next school year. But before that, and before the emails that we could respond to, anything you wanted to cover today?
Nothing that I could think of. I think that, you know, I would love to talk about where we're at and the process, especially this year. I think it's definitely been a huge learning experience, and we've had some big successes and some little bumps are along the way that we learned from as well. So it's just been a big learning curve, and also just such a wonderful experience for helping our most challenging students.
Well, and if all you've had is little bumps, then you're ahead of the game. But
good.
give us a sense of that evolution, if you would, and what bumps you had to overcome, and where you think you're at now, and where you think you want to start up again next school year. That's a tall agenda, but we're all ears.
Okay. Sure. Well, I think from starting from the beginning of this year, we had started last February, so last school year. So in the beginning of this year, we were really excited to start spreading CPS to, you know, to everybody in our school instead of the core group that was really excited and gung-ho. And that's when we were able to have Kim came up and did a training for 3 hours after school where every staff member stayed after, which that just showed us a lot, too, that everybody stayed on their own time. They were that interested in hearing everything for themselves, I think, instead of just always hearing from us, from my principal, myself, and the team. So that's where we started. And I think that's where I thought everything would kind of just fall into place, and that's where we really found we had to do a lot more supporting, even after that three-hour training where we really had to make a system for people to be able to access the team and also just the comfort levels of different staff members. You know, some just weren't as comfortable doing Plan Bs without support. So kind of figuring that out, too, because I think everybody had to, on the team had a different idea of what it would look like supporting the rest of the staff members. For some, you know, I think we thought maybe it would just be us taking over the Plan B conversations, or would it us be coaching? And definitely the most comfortable and the most successful was when we were just more coaches and people just, it was ready for everyone to kind of try it on their own. And so, like for myself, I like kind of trying it out without somebody around when I first was learning. So there's other people that just wanted to just take off and try it on their own and can report back to us. So I think that was just such a big learning for me, too, just how to implement a brand new philosophy and program into a school. It just changes, is hard, and it's easy, you know, kind of easier when you first think about it, but it's a big process, and it really taught me about how to do, like, systematic changes. So I don't know if that answers the first part.
I think that a lot of schools that I come into contact with have a lot of faith that doing a rollout and having everybody read Lost at School will move them further than those things usually move people. I would call a rollout and a book study, reading Lost at School, a very good start.
Yeah.
But my bet is that you and I would probably agree on just a good start, and that really the most important pieces and the hardest parts are yet to come. But maybe you could talk about that a little.
Yeah, absolutely. And just even thinking back a few years ago, we did have a book study because you came to our district, I think it was even 5 years ago, that you, it was when Lost at School had first come out and you did a one-day training for our district. So everybody was able to hear you speak and do that, just that overview. And from there, a bunch of us did a book study. And again, it just kind of, it helps the people that were already interested, I think. So it wasn't enough to really get things going and to really find out how to work the systems and really to just really question everyone's philosophy, really kind of think deep about how we've been doing things and how we want to change things. So that, but it was a great start, and it really, you know, instead, and also I think it gave us the opportunity to, people took kind of what they wanted to, but we had to make sure this year that it wasn't just bits and pieces. You know, that's, I didn't want it to be just another kind of program that you take little parts that you like, but it to be a huge philosophical switch. And that, you know, that's harder than, it's easy for the people that are already there, but it's harder for, you know, others that are just farther from it. So that's what we really worked on this year. And I think we're in a really nice place right now where you can hear everyone's language has really changed and working with kids and what our expectations are. And my principal and I were just talking about, you know, we have a pre-K program at our school, a public pre-K, but, you know, it's not a requirement. We've often in the past, kids have come and just don't seem to be, in our eyes, we thought they weren't quite ready. So we would just talk to the families and, you know, not, have them not come. And now we don't do that anymore, and we try to work with the families and with the children's needs problem solving to be a much more collaborative effort in starting these four-year-olds right off. And it's just, it's amazing to see the growth, and the, I think the huge reason that for the change is that the kids see that we are willing to do whatever we can do to problem solve and make it work for them. So it's been just
that's
a lot
fabulous.
Of changes. Yeah, yeah, and that's, and that was never our first instincts before. It was more, okay, this is not working. We're not fitting. You're not fitting in our program. So you just, it's easy to say, wait a year and come back, and then we'll figure out how to make it fit. So that's a really big change.
Huge.
And I know the families are so appreciative that we're not saying, you know, no, we're not ready for you, and next year we'll be ready. I think one of our students has gone through about 5 or 6 preschools until they came to our school. So,
well, that speaks to a comfort level in your building in not being petrified of kids who have special needs and kids who may have some mental health issues.
Yeah.
And boy, what a wonderful development that is, to have you all feel like you can, and I don't want to go too far here, but feel like you can
right.
understand and handle practically, and that's the key word, practically anything that comes your way.
Yes.
Do you think people feel that way?
I do. I really do. I do think that people feel that way, and it's just such a shift, because instead of trying to figure out how to get kids with mental illness and other huge challenges on getting them out, we just figure out what we can do to make the program work at our school, because it makes such a big difference, and it's what they need and what they deserve. And if they had, you know, kids with just with other lagging skills and other areas of academics, you know, that's just, and everyone knows what to do when we have kids like that. But with the challenging behavior, I think it's just changed how we approach the families and the children. And I do think that the staff, we've all really made a big switch.
And is it primarily the assessment of lagging skills and unsolved problems that has helped people feel more comfortable, or have you been, is that instrument really what's done the trick?
I think that instrument really helps. I also think it's done the trick that it just, you can see the change in the children, and that it really makes a difference. And once everyone feels more successful and sees that we're helping so many children, you know, just one child at a time, and those successes just make you want to keep on going and knowing you're doing the right thing. I think that's the biggest. It's just such, the empathy part, and just being so much more empathetic towards these children and not blaming the families, and makes you approach the situations so much differently. I think it's a lot. It's the whole philosophy, and it's the dedication of our staff.
That's I find that one of the biggest issues in a lot of schools is that a lot of school staff don't feel like they are confident in their ability to deal with mental health issues or behavioral issues.
Yeah.
And here in your building, we're not hearing that at all.
No, not at any. That reminds me of a thing. We had a child in the behavior that was having extreme trouble, and I remember a staff member just saying to me that same thing, just saying they're just not comfortable. They were so worried about how to handle a child with such a severe, seemingly mental illness or you know, a lot of lagging skills, and thinking about who could we call, who can we consult. And I was able just to say to her that, well, I just saw you with the child, and you did everything that any consultant would tell you to do. You can do this. You are not doing you can't do anything wrong. All the things that you're doing right now, all these things you're trying, it's working, and you're building relationships that he's never had, and he is such a different kid right now, and I really believe it's because of that genuine relationship. And once he felt accepted and once he felt that all these adults wanted him to be at our school, he changed. And he's, you know, it's just a joy to see him down the hall and watch everybody celebrate together every little success he makes. Like, you know, just bringing the mail envelope down the hall, like a regular role that a lot of our children do, and to see him do that with a smile, it's that's what keeps everyone going.
That's fantastic. So that sounds like where you're at now. Do you still have staff who are not as on board as you'd like them to be?
Yeah, I think that we still have people that have different ideas and different philosophies, but we're at a point where we can really talk about it together. I think it took a while to get to that point, but now that we're at a point that we can all just talk and figure out what's best for our school as a whole staff, we're just at a much more open place to communicate. And I think that what I saw that could have happened that would have been disastrous is that if you are in a school where you feel like there's two sides and this is the CPS side and this is the non-CPS side, I think that can be so dangerous. And once we saw that could be a possibility, just really opening up conversation and making sure that everybody feels comfortable just expressing themselves and working it out and having Plan B conversations among each other, that was really powerful.
Wow.
Whether you don't want it, I can easily see that happening, and you don't want to feel like you're defending two sides to something. But we don't, and we can all slip back, members of the team, we can come to each other and say, like, do you really think this child can control this, or, you know, can she really do well? So it's just about communicating and feeling safe and trusting each other as a staff, too.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
And what do you think next year holds? I often say to people that it takes 1 year of really hitting it hard to make giant strides, and then another year or two to solidify.
Yeah.
You guys really hit it hard this year and part of last.
Yeah.
Are you in solidification mode these days, and what's that look like?
Yes, I think that we really need to make sure that we keep meeting as a team. You know, I think that could be such an issue if we stop, you know, now that we don't have Kim training us every week, you're just still really dedicating our time and making sure that we meet and keep reminding everyone of the systems in place, and because that could get easily, you know, kind of off the table if people are feeling like they are too overwhelmed or have too much to do. But I just really want to keep on making sure that those meetings are in place. And once we have those in place, I think that it can really keep going and supporting each other and bringing cases to the table and watching each other doing Plan B, making time for Plan B conversations, because I know that's the first thing that goes to when I'm feeling overwhelmed and I find myself too much in emergency Plan B. I know it's time to. That's always what's missing, is that we're not doing enough scheduled Plan B. So keeping those systems in place and making sure we start off the school year that way, right away, I think that'll make a big difference.
You had some visitors from Sweden last week.
Yes, it was so exciting.
How did that go?
My friends Sven
and Gunnar from Göteborg, Sweden, came over to look at schools doing collaborative problem solving, and yours was one of the ones they visited. How'd it go?
It went very well. It was really just so fun to sit and talk to them and you know, hear what they're doing and just be able to explain the process of what we've done here and kind of talk a little bit about the differences and give them a tour of our little school. And, you know, now we just want to go to Sweden to visit them. So that's next on our list. Yeah, it was really fun, so I appreciate you sending them our way.
Did they seem anything in particular that they seemed struck by in terms of what's going on in your building?
I think they were struck, I think, by the dedication of time. I think they thought that was not, it seemed to me that that was really nice that we were able to meet so much. I think that they haven't found that people dedicate that much like after school time and time to meet with kids. So I think they were struck by that. And then also just the similarities, a lot of things that we say, they go, that's the same, what experience they've had. So it was just a really positive experience, and they were obviously so knowledgeable.
There are other schools in the project who are not having such an easy go of the time issue.
Yes.
Maybe you could talk about that a little bit, about how you all did it, because that's, I always say, the four-letter word in a lot of buildings. They just don't feel like they have the time to do CPS, and I'm always saying you got to put in the time to save it, and ultimately you will save it, but how'd y'all do that?
Well, we worked it into our student assistance team that we've already have established, so that's just something that we always have had and that everyone's really been dedicated to. So we worked CPS primarily into our student assistance team, which always met for an hour a week. So that was really helpful. And then keeping that Tuesday after school CPS time, we just so enjoyed it. We enjoyed being together. We enjoyed talking about our learning and, of course, enjoyed when the training was happening with Kim. So that part wasn't a problem ever. I think the biggest hurdle is just making sure you have time during the day to do the Plan B with children. And that it helped a lot to have we have a substitute teacher that comes every Tuesday. So that once we started that, we were able to really schedule time. And once we figured out that system, too, that we put up like a Google Docs where everyone could sign up and you didn't have to go through three people to ask, can you relieve me on lunch duty so I can meet with your student? It was just a lot easier to make those arrangements and started to be more smoother that way. I think the Plan B either what, if you don't schedule them, and I know that's what you always say, if you just say, I'll get to it when I get to it, you don't get to it. So you have to write it down and tell somebody that you're committing to it, and then you end up, you do it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the mentality is in your building at this point? Are people feeling that the time required by collaborative problem solving is oppressive and unreasonable, or are people feeling like collaborative problem solving is saving time? Where are you all on that?
I think that people think it's saving time. I think that they see the benefit, especially when we're making a lot of efforts, such as having the substitute teacher come in and just asking them to devote just a few minutes of their team meeting. They meet as a grade level meeting, and just saving time when you're having team meetings or our SAT meetings instead of spending a lot of time talking about things that aren't helpful. I think they can see that those have been streamlined, so you save time that way as well. There's some weeks I think where things start to get crazy busy, then you can say that's harder to fit things in, but you always go back to reminding yourself that you're going to be saving time in the end and watching such growth in children. So, I think it's just about openly talking and communicating, and it depends sometimes on the time of the school year. I think some times are tougher than others as well. So,
if you had to name the biggest hurdle you all had to get over to get this ball rolling, would time be it, or would it be something else?
I don't think it would have been time. I think just going back to what I was saying before, that the biggest hurdle was realizing that it took a lot of open communication and really encouraging people to say what they're thinking and not turn into a defensive mode and just really talking. I think it took a little bit to get to that point. And
did you all have to work on that, or were you just a building that was naturally communicating well?
I think we always communicated well, but I think it took us to really have a staff meeting where we opened it up instead of us always trying to train everybody else to realize that, okay, now it was time for us to just all kind of talk about concerns and not feel like we were just training them and saying, well, no, we wouldn't do it that way because, but to really hear all of their concerns as a group, and then to be able to, you know, really answer questions and try to solve some of the problems that way. So, but I think time, you know, organizing the systems is also was a hurdle, especially we feel like in our building we don't have a lot of extra staff members and a lot of extra people to watch classes. So that, I think, just people, not necessarily even time, but just having extra people around to be able to cover classes. Or, you know, my principal and myself, we're really it with 470 kids. So we just need to make sure that we schedule time for Plan B conversations as well, so we don't find ourselves always just running around doing other things. So I think, you know, people too, that's a hurdle at our school because we feel pretty understaffed in a lot of ways.
I think that that is a shared sentiment in almost every school I'm in these days.
Yeah.
The budget cuts have been massive.
Yep.
And maybe you all were feeling that even before budget cuts in your state, but I don't know if I know of any. I don't think I've encountered any school system in the last 2 or 3 years that isn't stretched way too thin in every building.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that puts another level of stress and lots of things to balance.
And yet you all have done this right in an area of, in a time of significant budget cuts, which is rather phenomenal. It's not just the stress of implementing collaborative problem solving in your building. It's the stress of all of the cuts that have been going on in your state and every other one.
Yep. Well, it's such a great answer to help, you know, giving a whole staff tools that are just free. I mean, you have all your information just is on the website. There's nothing hidden. It just takes practice and dedication, but it's a something that once you really internalize it, you can apply and help these children where you might not necessarily have programs or staff to, you know, to be dedicated just to children with emotional problems. Like, you know, our school, we are, the teachers are, really, they're right there with these kids all day, and this is a tool that is immediately useful. You know, it's something that they want to do because they want to help these children. They are so connected to these kids, and they're so empathetic, and it's a way to help, which is, you know, everybody wants.
Have any staff quit because of collaborative problem solving?
Quit? No.
Quit? Left?
Quit? No. No, not at all. No,
Well, go ahead, sorry.
No, I think that it just made people so much, just, the empathy is huge. There's so much empathy for our kids, especially the kids with challenging behaviors.
Are there kids who you are quite certain would have been placed out of your building pre-collaborative problem solving, who you feel you've been able to keep because people are now implementing it?
Yes, I definitely do. Especially, you know, as I said, those younger kids are, you don't even have to do anything. You know, we would have, the first couple of weeks of school, told these parents that they weren't ready. And then that would have meant that they probably would have had a, you know, a different placement. And I definitely have kids that are so successful now that before we would have been putting all our energy into kind of proving that this isn't working. And that's not to say that, you know, we do have kids that we're also not in a state where we would never say that this isn't working because we don't have,
that's right.
You know, we don't have a self-contained classroom or anything here. So, but I think that also comforts people and our staff. They know that we wouldn't just say that everyone has to stay here because for the sake of that, you know, if it doesn't fit, it wouldn't fit. But we for sure have children that would have been out of district a long time ago, and that are successful.
Incredible.
Yeah, I think so.
When you look back, I mean, you're probably running on fumes at this point in the school year because it's early May, and
yes.
Who isn't running on fumes at this point in the school year? But when you look back, it's really quite something, isn't it?
It really is. We always say that it's hard to even, the beginning of the school year seems like so long ago, it feels like it was a different year, but it's been quite a journey, and we've all learned so much, and I think we're even a tighter staff and just willing to really talk to each other and figure these things out in the sense of trust and relationship that we've built that I think spills on to how we're helping children.
And the cool part is that the governor has expressed interest in visiting your school. I don't know if that's going to happen this school year, but that's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
To have a governor be interested in what you've done in your building with collaborative problem solving. If you had, I know you've talked about this a little already, if you had advice for a building that is struggling with it, or just getting going, any pearls of wisdom?
Well, I think you definitely just don't give up on meeting as a team. You know, meeting with that core team where I get so much energy from those team members, and we can really challenge each other and talk to each other. So I think that's a really important thing. Making sure that you're really listening to everybody's concerns. I think if people start to feel like they're getting, that you're ignoring what they've always felt like that's worked and things that they're really knowledgeable about, I think that gets dangerous as well. So just doing what collaborative problem solving is all about, and doing that with staff as well, that being empathetic and listening and it takes time. It's not going to happen overnight, and it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of practice, I think, to giving people, staff, that opportunity and the courage to try it, and that sitting in a room, even if it means just trying it by yourself with the Plan B cheat sheet, that's you can't do anything wrong. We've had times where staff has come and say, well, I don't know if we solved anything in that half hour. We just keep saying that listening to a child for a half hour and giving empathy for a half hour cannot be a waste of time. So that's important too, because no one's going to be good at it right away, and it does take a lot of practice. And using that Plan B cheat sheet, I think, is really important. We laminated that right away and gave that to everybody. So kind of
good.
Scattered advice, but those are a few things.
I know you're a principal, so I think I know the answer to this question. Did your principal say to everybody, you must do this, and sort of draw a line in the sand and say, almost from the get-go, we are going to do collaborative problem solving from now on? Or was her approach different than that?
It was different. I think, we did all the training, we did all the talking, and it was definitely not overnight here, this is what you're doing. This year, I think when we started really trying to document kind of what we do here, we've been able to work that into our philosophy as a school. But that took a lot of time, too. I think if she had said that on the first, this is what we're doing, we had a couple people go to a training, this is our new philosophy, that would have been a huge setback. That it took a while, but there's a time when you say this is what we do, but also to say, this is how we can help you, and this is what will happen when you send a child to the office or to me or to the office. This is what's going to happen, and I think that made people feel comfortable too when we were able to really document it and spell it out and explain. And also, there can be so many misconceptions. Things like, well, I didn't think I could send kids to the office anymore, or I didn't think that I could call you to come help me if a child's being disruptive. So those are so important to clear up, and once we kind of wrote those all out too, like, of course you call the principal if you're having trouble or if a child's being disruptive, but just just know that when that happens, that the principal will be doing collaborative problem solving, and this is what that looks like. So I think that was helpful to spell out, because we did go through a time when people felt like they couldn't really, you know, get help when they needed it. So you run into things that you never thought you'd run into, which is why it's keeping, you know, talking and devoting the time and not expecting this to happen overnight is so important.
And in an era of continuously shifting priorities and demands and asking so much of people who work in education settings, why do this? Why is this important? Why make this a priority?
Well, because until you really can address the needs of, you know, the emotional needs of children and to help with the challenging behavior, we can't move on to all the other really important things that are happening and that our children need to be taught. And teachers and staff members, they want help with this because, you know, kids are coming in with a lot of challenges at a very young age, and everyone wants an approach, and our old approach isn't working. I mean, I know every time I fall back into some of my old tricks, it backfires right away, and you know, kind of, it's so easy to do. And you know, if you're feeling under the gun or feeling like you need to take care of something right away, you think maybe if you use some sort of incentive or a punishment right there, but it, you know, for with challenging kids, it backfires so quickly. So we need something that works. We need something to help, especially in budget crisis and when we don't have staff and we don't have a lot of resources right now. This is such a wonderful approach to that you can see so many results. So,
but why not put our energy into the kids, and I'm going to use a cliche here, who are there to learn? Why not? Why put so much energy into the ones who are impeding the learning of others? Why not just put your energy into the ones who are ready to learn?
Yeah. Well, I think that CPS helps every child, even the kids that are ready to learn. They need this approach as well, and they need this empathy and trying to figure out what's happening and what the unsolved problems are. So it just helps everybody in the classroom. And also, when you have a child that has challenging behavior, they deserve to be in that classroom too, and they deserve to be feeling the joys of school and learning and making friends and, you know, gaining skills. It also gives the other kids so much empathy. I mean, we have countless, examples of kids that have had some extreme challenging behavior, and it's amazing to see the empathy of the other students. And, you know, I know for my own, I have four of my children go to school here, and I love hearing them talk about what kids need and, you know, how they problem solve today, or, you know, I think I've said this before, but my first grader who's in a classroom with a student, that part of the plan is to be able to build with different toys, you know, while he's in class. And for my little boy who's obsessed with Legos and other things, I thought that would, if anyone would have a problem, I thought that would be him. But he came home that first day and just said, well, he needs some extra Legos during the day because he needs to learn how to be in school right now. So it's so much easier for the kids, I think, to understand and to be empathetic than sometimes the adults. So, yeah, it helps them all, and it forms a huge community. And even watching some of our masters at CPS be able to do problem solving with a whole group, you know, I noticed that you were having trouble at recess today. What's going on? And it's a shift. It's a language shift. It's how you start to think differently. So it helps. It helps everybody.
I'm blown away by what a great job you all have done. And, of course, if people want to see more about your school in particular, they just need to go to the Lives in the Balance website, because the video that we shot, that's the mini documentary, as we're calling it, Main Reports, which they can find on the homepage, on the right-hand side, there's a link. That's a video that is all about your school and how you all have done it. Not that you're the only school in Maine doing it. Truth is, there's going to be other video up about some schools that are not too far from you that are doing something similar. And the really cool thing about the project is that collaborative problem solving is being done throughout the state of Maine, because the project required that schools be geographically distributed throughout the state. The website that we have been thinking was going to be launched for anywhere for the last 6 to 8 months is very close now.
Oh, good.
And
so
each
neat.
School is going to have its own page. This program will be posted on that website on your page.
Oh, great.
So that people from all over Maine and all over North America and all over the world can read about how your school and others have done it, how you started it, what hurdles you encountered, how you overcame them. And it's really cool that your school has been so open to new ideas, and I know that you and your principal have been the driving forces there, and it's really quite an accomplishment.
Well, we appreciate everything you've done, and it's just been such a pleasure and a joy, and for our new learning and to apply something that makes such a difference. So, thank you for everything.
Well, let's call it a day for our educators panel. We're going to end a few minutes early here, but there was an email that I thought we could talk about, but I think we at this point don't have enough time to do it. So obviously I knew Tom wasn't going to join us. I guess Carol had a conflict come up, but this has been great to be able to spend the entire program with just you. I guess you're going to be the first school that we're going to have a program posted on that new website. And thank you for being part of the educators panel this year as well. This has been a fun panel, and I think we're going to keep the crew together next year if everybody's willing and able.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
And, of course, I'm hoping that you all will be seeing more of me, because I'm moving to Maine in about a month and a half. And so, all because there's so much collaborative problem solving going on in Maine, I hate to miss it all and want to be even closer to it. So, lives in the balance.
That is great.
And I will be residents of Maine by next school year, and that's very exciting too.
Very exciting, yes. We are expecting to see you much more. That is so exciting.
I have every intention of making sure that that happens.
Oh, good. Great.
So, Nina, thanks again for being part of the panel this year, and to our listeners, this is our last educators panel of the year. We have a very exciting program tomorrow on the parent program. Robin Peters Bennett, who I'm looking up the organization now because I am perpetually forgetting the name of it. But this is something that people, whether you work in an education setting or not, will definitely want to listen up on. She's with the U.S. Alliance to End the Hitting of Children.
Oh.
And she will be my guest on the parent program tomorrow, Parenting Your Challenging Child. And so that's extremely exciting as well. Not only that, about once a month next year, I'm going to be doing an Issues in Children's Mental Health radio program, and it'll be separate from the collaborative problem solving at school and separate from Parenting Your Challenging Child. It'll be an entirely new program, and we will be having people like Robin on the program so that lots of people know what's going on out there and that we actually are making progress in understanding and helping behaviorally challenging kids even better. So, Nina, thanks for your role in that, and we're going to call it a day for today's program.
Thank you.
You bet. I will be back next week with our last edition of Anytown High School. Make sure you don't miss that. Talk to you then.